Hi there, you're listening to the Spirit Room podcast with me, psychic medium and mentor, Melissa White. This show is for developing mediums, budding intuitives, and those who just find themselves curious about spirit and the afterlife. I'll share my experiences with you working with spirit as a professional medium for over a decade. I'll also interview people that I find brilliant and fascinating and provide you with some insight into how you can live this life to the fullest, knowing that there is so much more available to us than what meets the human eye. So I invite you to sit back, relax, enjoy, and let's just see what spirit has in store for us today. Hello and welcome back to the Spirit Room podcast. I'm Melissa White and I'm really excited today to have a very special guest. Her name is Claire Bowman and she is a content creator and an ADHD advocate. And I'm just super pleased that she's here to spend time with us today. So welcome, Claire.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for being here. And I thought we could start by just chatting a little bit about how we met initially.
Okay, yeah, crazy. Do you want me to start or do you want to start?
I would say go for it, because what's funny is that I got on TikTok first as just like a consumer. I was just watching videos. And I came across your TikTok and I'm like, this girl seems so familiar to me. And I loved what you were doing. I loved your content. And then I happened upon a video one time that you made, and it was about an experience that you had. And I was like, I wonder if this is me she's talking about. Like, I just had that realization that it might have been me. So anyways, you tell them.
That's so crazy that it came across your For You page. Like, yeah. How interesting. Yeah, so I have met you 3 times in person, which is wild, but it was like many years ago. So in 2015, I had a friend who was very important in my life, and she passed away, and it was horrible. It was really tragic, and I felt the need to have some sort of closure, and I saw that you were doing a group reading, and so I really needed to do that I felt called to do that. So I went to one of your group readings, and the things that you told me about my friend changed my life, and it was amazing. So thank you so much for that. Don't want to get emotional, but it was so special, and you're a special human being in my life. So thank you so much. And then I think I held 2 group readings myself after that, because you were so important. Aww. So thank you.
No, my pleasure. And I do recall, and this was, yeah, it must have been like 2015. Like, I know it was a long time ago. But when I think back, I do, the group that I think it would have been, was it at like a friend of yours, like her place, the first group?
Yeah, it was just like some random person's house that I've never met before.
Okay.
So it was really outside of my comfort zone, but I felt really called to meet you and to hear if you had anything to say. But it was quite interesting because I was pregnant with my daughter at the time, and I was very, very pregnant. And you told me that my friend knows that I was going to name my daughter after her. And I was actually going to name my daughter after her. So her middle name is my daughter's middle name is my friend's name, which is Emily. So that was crazy that you knew that.
Yeah, well, it speaks to your friend's love for you and the ability for her to bring like that kind of detail, that kind of information. It's all because of that love, and also your ability to be open, you know. And we were chatting a bit before we started the recording about how you are. I mean, you're very open, you're very intuitive as well. And so it just kind of is like the perfect combination, you know. It's like you've got that strong spirit that wants to come and wants to bring you that love and that comfort, and then with you being open and receptive, and then me just being willing to, you know, to do it, it kind of creates that perfect situation to just have like that, just like such healing, you know. So that's best part of it for me. So I'm so glad that you had that experience.
Yeah, it honestly brought me so much healing. And I think about it all the time. So thank you for that comfort.
No, it's my pleasure. And I just think like it's so interesting how that happened, because I knew when I saw the video, I'm like, I must have done like readings for this girl or something. Like I recognized your name. And then I also was just like, no, there's something about her. And then I just kept watching the videos, and then it was just so interesting when I came across that one. So that, yeah, I think I reached out and I was like, are you talking about me? And you're like, yes. It's so funny.
You knew.
Yeah. So tell me about how it's been for you, like when and how you would have received your ADHD diagnosis.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I have struggled with feeling different and knowing deep inside. This is the intuitive part, right? I just knew deep down inside from when I was a child that something was not right. And not that there's anything wrong with me, but I just felt so different than other people. And I could never put my finger on what it was. And because I was a millennial, I was always told, oh, it's anxiety. Oh, it's depression. So I believed that about myself. I thought I was just depressed. I was anxious. And that continued on until I was a late teen and I moved out on my own and I started antidepressants and nothing ever worked for me. And then I had my daughter in 2016 and I had like my life was forever changed having a child, and it was really overwhelming for me. And I didn't know what to call it, but I just kept saying, okay, I just need my antidepressants. And then after I had my son, it got worse. And it was just this overwhelming feeling of, I don't know what's going on within me, but it doesn't feel like the labels that they're giving me. And I think it was before the pandemic, I was actually diagnosed as bipolar. And I was put on bipolar meds, and then that wasn't working. So I went and saw a psychiatrist, and he said that I had OCD and persistent depressive disorder. And all of these labels never felt right to me because I didn't feel manic. I didn't feel like I was a germaphobe. Not that that's, you know, everything that encompasses OCD, but I didn't feel like I had those labels. It didn't feel right. And it was during the pandemic, I decided to go off all of my medications. And this is when I had that huge, you know, spiritual awakening, big transformation of my life that a lot of people have seen. And I decided to go off of my medication for a year. And it just felt so wrong what everyone was telling me, what, you know, the labels. And I joined TikTok, and at first I was like, okay, this is like a stupid dancing app. Like, what is going on here? I'm too old for this. And then my For You page started showing me these videos of ADHD. And I was like, okay, that's weird. I'm not ADHD. Like, I'm not hyper. I'm actually called lazy by everyone I know, but that's cool. So I just kept scrolling. And then I was like, why is it showing me so many videos? And I really started listening, particularly to ADHD in women and how it presents. And there was just this moment of, oh my God, this is me. It was like a light bulb moment. And I don't know if it was like the universe trying to show it to me via, like via TikTok or what was going on, but it was shown to me for a reason because it changed my entire life. And I remember my cousin was over and I was saying to her, like, I think I have ADHD. And she was like, that's weird because I was just diagnosed with ADHD. And then I talked to all of my other family members, and I think there were like 5 immediate cousins, and then 2 out of 3 of my siblings also have ADHD. And it's very highly hereditary, genetic, whatever you want to call it. So I was like, this is crazy. Like, what are the chances that I have ADHD too? So I talked to my doctor. I brought in all of my evidence and he screened me and I have ADHD. So that really, it kind of solidified how I felt as a child because I'm not depressed or anxious. I experience the world differently. I have a disability and people didn't see it for so long. And that was so validating to me that I wasn't flawed and I wasn't lazy. They just missed it.
Oh,
so
oh,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Sorry, that was a long story, but no, that's the gist.
I just feel like it's so relatable. And for me, it was very similar. Like, it was because I literally was seeing videos of people mm-hmm. like you who were sharing about what it mm-hmm. actually is, especially in women. And I didn't know, I didn't realize the correlation between ADHD in women and like binge eating disorder.
Yes.
And when I was talking to my bariatric doctor and then a nutritionist, she was basically, she just said, have you ever considered that you might have ADHD? And I was like, oh, like, lately I have been really considering that. And she said, oh, well, because there is this correlation. And I was like, what? Like, I had no idea. So for me, it was exactly what you're saying, that validation, because I literally spent my life really thinking that there was something really internally flawed with me mm-hmm. because I couldn't seem to keep up or do the things like that seemed very easy for other people, like simple tasks like laundry. There's a lot of shame around not being able to keep things mm-hmm. as perfect as I would like or as organized as I would like.
Yeah.
And so, and then with the binge eating, you know, disorder, that was also a really amazing piece of information to have, and then to realize that, oh, like there's an actual like reason that this is difficult for me. It's not just a lack of willpower.
I felt that too. It was almost a relief that I wasn't flawed. Like I wasn't just, oh, I can't stop eating. And I think a lot of society puts morality on your weight. And they don't understand that maybe there's an underlying issue. They just think, oh, you're just lazy. Oh, you're just fat. You need to change your lifestyle. And they don't understand that there's other things going on that are outside of someone's control. And until they're treated, the person a lot of times cannot lose the weight or cannot get their eating under control. And it's very interesting how it's treated, you know, by other people, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I can't say like the amount of times that I'd had a doctor say to me, well, you need to eat less and exercise mm-hmm. more. Like that was their solution. Like every time I would have like any kind of health.
It's issue. Horrible.
And it's horrible. I just felt so, it was so condescending, first of all. And I also felt like, well, don't you think that I've tried that? Like, don't you think that I don't think about that every single day? Like,
yes.
So knowing that there's like a reason and that there is an ability to have treatment, you know, and mm-hmm. is an ability to actually get what you need so that you can actually tackle it. Like that was such a huge awakening for me too. And just like a comfort. Like, I think I just was like crying when I found out, but like, so happy about it. Not that it's like something necessarily good news, but it is because it helped me to understand myself a lot better.
Absolutely. It's like going around with like a broken arm and you're like, why can't I write properly? And everyone's like, well, I write properly. What's wrong with you? Just put in more effort. And it's like, I literally was going around life with a broken arm. We're not the same. I can't do what you're doing, right? So I don't think that there's anything wrong with utilizing tools. And a lot of us need those tools to be able to be successful. So I don't think there's anything wrong with getting treatment. And yeah, I think it's great.
I've noticed in like just in the spiritual community at times there's a lot of controversy about a lot of things, but there's a weird stigma around medication. I've noticed that there are some people in the spiritual community that really look down on it. Like if you're a spiritual person, like quote unquote spiritual person, that you basically, if you take medication for stuff like that, that basically it's like you're kind of not as enlightened, I guess. And so I've tried to be pretty open and vocal about the fact that I take medication for my ADHD and it has helped and improved my life in a lot of ways. And not only that, there's absolutely no shame in being any, even if you don't call yourself a spiritual person, in any way of taking medication that is helpful to you and that you actually need it, like you require it.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with you. That's crazy. Like, do they think that it, like a lot of people, especially with ADHD medication, I find, they think that it makes you like, do you remember what they used to say to like kids that took Ritalin? They were like, oh, they're drooling at their desk. Like, that's not what Ritalin does. That's over-medicated, like, you know, over-medicated Ritalin. But most of it does not do that to you. Like, it just helps you do your laundry. Like, I don't understand where that stigma has come from. I don't know. I don't get it.
It is pretty intense, I think, especially with ADHD. Like, I find I don't know. It seems, well, I think there's still stigma around even stuff like depression and stuff like that. But I find with ADHD, it's almost like there's a bit more shame involved, or like there's a bit more stigma when it comes to the medication of it. Like I've just noticed that. It's interesting to see that. But I tend to just feel like no. And then I have had people, like students, that have asked, well, I'm, you know, contemplating taking this or that, like for whatever mental health concerns, will this affect my ability to connect, or will this affect my ability to, like, you know, like more so like connecting with spirit and all of that? Mm-hmm. And what I would say in my experience, it's always been, because I've gone to spirit and said like, oh, like this is a medication that I, you know, I need to take, or I'm going to take if I've had any concern. And the answer that, and the response that I've always had, is that they'll work with me however they need to work with me. So, you know, they're invested in us living a human life too, and we have to take care of ourselves to do that. So I just always want people to know that, like, it's not, there's no fear of taking something and you losing your ability. You know, if anything, it's been helpful to me to be able to take care of the other parts of my life, so that when I do my work, it's actually, I have more clarity. I have more of a sense of being at peace, because I know that the rest of my life is not necessarily a dumpster fire all the time. You know, like,
yes. You're reducing the overwhelm.
Overwhelm. And, you know, not to say that there's still not times, but definitely it's helped a lot.
That's amazing.
So tell us, what are the things that have been helpful for you? Like, what have you really implemented that's been helpful for you to manage with your ADHD?
Oh boy, there is a lot. I feel like I've done a lot of work. Obviously, medication has helped immensely. The first time I took ADHD medication, it felt like someone lifted 1,000 pounds off of my shoulders. It felt like, wow, is life this easy for everyone?
That same thought.
It was like my brain is like an office, and there's papers everywhere. And then when I took the medication, I was able to put those papers into file folders. You know, it was like, wow, have I really been living like this my entire life? So the medication has helped immensely. And for anyone listening, medication will not help you unless you help yourself. You have to understand, this is with anything in life, okay? It's a tool, and it's a very great tool, but you also have to have things in place and put the work in for that tool to be beneficial to your life. So I've put in a lot of systems and routines. So you might see me doing Fresh Sheet Friday. So every Friday, I strip all of our bedding and make sure we have fresh sheets for the weekend. And because I couldn't remember to wash my bedding. What else do I do? I do a 2-week meal plan. So every 2 weeks, I'll set up all the meals that we're going to be having for dinners for 2 weeks. And then I'll do a grocery list and a grocery shop. So that really has helped as well. And what are the other things? Oh, therapy. If you can afford it, therapy has been so helpful. And I have an ADHD specialized therapist. So what I did was I went to the, you know, therapy collective, and I filled out their form, and they matched me with a therapist who has a background in ADHD, and she's absolutely amazing. She's helped me so much, and she taught me so many things about myself, like staying in my window of tolerance. And she has probably been the best thing I've ever done for myself. if you can go to therapy, definitely do that.
Mm-hmm.
And no, that's just using medication along with those systems and routines and the therapy has been crazy helpful.
That's great. And I love the Fresh Sheet Fridays because what I've noticed with myself, for me, it's like time, it kind of exists in a different way for me, like almost.
Yes.
Well, different for me.
And yeah.
That thought of like, yeah, okay, I knew I got to do that. But the actual implementation of that action and following through and getting it done, it can get lost in the mix of everything else very, very easily. And I literally mm-hmm. feel like I blink and it's been a month. And I'm just like, yes. Oh, and then there's that shame around like, oh God, like I'm gross. Like I didn't do this. Like,
yeah.
why can I not do this? Like it's a very normal, simple task.
And yes.
I used to do that quite automatically. And so then you get into that spiral. So yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. stuff like that, I feel like to someone who's maybe more neurotypical, they might listen to that and be like, that's not really a tip. Like you just wash your sheets when you need to wash your sheets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It really is valuable. And it really is, I think, important to share with people that, yeah, there can be those things implemented that will just create a bit of structure for yourself that you're more likely to be successful. Like you're more likely to be mm-hmm. able to do them because you've carved it into your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because a lot of us struggle with, it's not really object permanence, but it's out of sight, out of mind. This can happen with tasks and things like losing your car keys all the time. And it can also happen with people, right? So unless those things are like screaming at you all the time, like children, that's why we're, you know, good moms because they're screaming at us to feed them. But if it's like things like plants or your bed sheets, you're not going to remember unless there's something associated with it. So if you're like, oh, it's Friday, and then your brain associates Friday with Fresh Sheet Friday or Pizza Night Friday. So it's kind of setting yourself up that way with the associating different tasks with different days that I find helps personally.
Yeah, no, that's a good, I think that's a really good tip.
Mm-hmm.
What about as far as accommodations? Like, are there any that you've, I guess, like found to be helpful for you to ask for in different scenarios in life?
Oh, that's difficult. I find that people don't really understand ADHD. And they're like, you're not hyper. And I'm like, there's so much more to ADHD than being hyper because of the chronic overwhelm. So a lot of accommodations, I know this sounds terrible, but I try not to ask from other people, but I do set up accommodations for myself. So things I have are loop earplugs. So I'll bring those around in my purse all the time. And those are made for neurodivergent humans. And they filter out the louder sounds and you can still hear people talking. So I have those. I also have, I was sent the Beats by Dre earbuds and they have a transparency mode. Those help me immensely. So you can still hear everything that's going on around you, but it dampens the sound as well. If I'm out at a busy place and I feel myself getting overwhelmed, I make sure and I give myself space and I'll like excuse myself to either my car or the washroom and give myself 5 minutes to decompress. And I've really made sure that I do that for myself instead of just pushing through. And I think that's a really large part of your diagnosis is understanding whether it's ADHD or autism or ADHD, which is both. It's understanding your own limits and telling yourself no, right? So that's a big accommodation I've had to give myself. It's you can only do so many things. You don't have to do what everyone else is doing. So I've found that those accommodations have been more helpful implementing them for myself rather than asking other people,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, it totally does. And I would say that, yeah, there's not really been any accommodations that I've asked anyone else, but
yeah,
definitely I've tried to give myself some of that, like as far as limits, like what you're saying about like knowing mm-hmm. that window of tolerance and also like realizing what I actually might need, you know, that it's okay if it's different than what someone else might need. And I think I've been, I realized that my ability, my capacity to overwork and to be like on a marathon schedule probably mm-hmm. is likely because of the ADHD. Like, it's given me that ability, but it's also been something that's been very detrimental to me at the same time, because I've almost like pushed it to the point where it's already too late. By the time I realize that I'm done and like I literally have nothing else to give, it's already happened. So I think like just understanding that a bit more, I've been trying to be more mindful about time and giving myself more of it, like more recovery, like a recovery kind of time.
Yes. Yeah. And people with ADHD struggle with, what's the word? Is it interoception or I don't know how to say it, but it's missing your own body cues. So you forget to eat, you forget to drink water, you forget, you don't know that you have to pee until you're like peeing your pants.
Yes.
It's those things. You're unable to regulate your own body. So it can be really difficult to know that you're in burnout before you get to burnout. So it's actually like having to listen to your body and doing check-ins throughout the day and saying, what do I need? And that's difficult to learn. That one I struggle with.
And it's just interesting because I just assumed before, oh, sorry about this. I used to just chalk it up to, well, I'm kind of like living here, but I'm also living like part of my life kind of in spirit. I'm kind of in both worlds. So I just chalk it up to that all the time. Like it was like, oh, okay, like I'm just kind of like off in the clouds because that's what I, you know, that's where I'm spending time is like in spirit. But actually, I think it's in addition to that, it's also the ADHD where I for a while, it's almost like I forgot that I had a physical body. Like I forgot that I was human. And so I would be very like not picking up on my body's like signs and cues and also like messaging that, wait a minute, something is wrong. Like something's right. Like my body would be like, I feel like screaming at me and I wasn't able to really pay attention. So now I feel like I'm more aware and I am taking that like actually connecting with my physical body again. And I feel like that had been for a long time just not happening.
Wow. That's so interesting. And it's also interesting because do you know ADHD girls, like one of the big signs of ADHD in girls is being spacey and like being in your own world in your head. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I wonder, like, I know we were just saying that maybe there's a correlation between being neurodivergent and also, you know, being, sorry, what do you call yourself?
Like, like being mediumistic or being, you know.
Okay. Mediumistic. I like that word.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there has to be because it's kind of, I think the thing when I think about it, like, okay, so say I'm doing a reading, I'm having a conversation with you. And then at the same time, I'm having this other conversation with spirit and I'm receiving all the information, you know, through my feeling, through my hearing, through my seeing, tasting, smelling, all of that. And then it's like, so carrying on those two things at the same time, having to hyper focus so much to be able to drown out and not be like focusing on anything else that's going on around me, anything like my life, like basically transporting myself into a totally altered state, like a different kind of reality. And I think because of ADHD, it just is conducive to that. It allows me to be able to do that. I can hyper-focus when I need to and then also be able to, you know, multitask and do all that other stuff because that's sort of like how I've lived my life. So I think oftentimes, like, I do run into students, clients, people that I connect with, and they are super intuitive. Like I know that to be true for you. Like I know that you're very intuitive and likely probably having experiences all the time that are like synchronicities and like,
oh yeah, people think I'm crazy.
Yeah. Well, but it's literally so, you know, I mean, it's so natural that it's not even, I think for some reason, for some people that is like cuckoo because they're just not, it's not a natural thing for them to like pay attention to or to be even aware of. But for you, it would be so natural. So I think there has to be a connection. Like there's too many, there's too many people that I encounter.
There's gotta be
both.
Well, and like when you're neurodivergent, you experience the world so differently. And I feel like we pick up on such little differences and the little nuances of everything. And I feel like we just look at things and notice the small details. So it would make sense that we would pick up on that more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And experiencing the depth, I think, of life, like mm-hmm. the,
oh yeah, the emotions. Oh God.
You know, and I think also to do with the sensory stuff, like the sensory overload. I thought maybe, oh, this is just like, because I'm psychic and, you know, I just like my sense of smell mm-hmm. is very developed because I kind of use all of my senses all the time. But there seems to be some kind of crossover, you know, like with that kind wow. of stuff. So, or you
can wonder,
yes, sensitivity to light, noise, have a real, I really want to look into the headphones you're talking about because I notice when I get overwhelmed or if I'm at my sort of point of like, almost feeling like I'm a bit like over my limit of what I can kind of mm-hmm. take in. And then there is, like a lot of noise or a lot of like outside noise around me, that will be such a trigger. Like that's something that I feel like I could go from being like okay to then being in a feeling like I'm just having a meltdown. And it's just from noise.
Yeah, the overstimulation. I would definitely check out the loops. I really like them.
Yeah, no, I think I definitely will for sure. One thing I wanted to ask you about in particular has to do with RSD. I think it's the rejective sensitive dysphoria. Could you share with our listeners like what that's about and a little bit about your experience with that? Because this is something that I see, well, I see it in myself, but I also see it in students like that I'm teaching. So I think it would be helpful to chat about it.
Yeah, probably the worst part for me because I'm so sensitive. I am like the most sensitive person ever. So RSD is rejection sensitive dysphoria, and it is extreme emotional, not only dysregulation, but extreme emotional pain when you are criticized or even just the perception of being criticized. So for me, I was extremely bullied as a child. It made it so much more worse. Like it made it horrible. Like I was living in a nightmare. But essentially it's you always think the worst of yourself and you're extremely sensitive to if someone says something to you or if someone looks at you different, you think, oh my God, this person hates me. I'm worthless. No one likes me. I'm a waste of space. I can never do anything good enough. I'm terrible at my job. I should just quit my job. And you can spiral really quickly. And for most women that I speak to, RSD is probably the worst part of ADHD for them. And it ruins their relationships and their friendships. And they have really, really low self-esteem.
Yeah.
So it's terrible.
It's super painful. And I think like for me, it's something where I've noticed that it's usually not that we don't take accountability or like responsibility. It's not a lack of being able to take criticism. It's more like just the pain that comes along with it that just feels like it's almost not manageable. It's like not bearable. It almost feels like unbearable to go through. Like, it's a big risk, I think, when you know that you experience RSD to then put yourself out there in any way, because the more, and I know you can speak to this too, the more you put yourself out there, the more you're kind of opening yourself up for potential criticism. And of course, like everyone and their dog always has like an opinion and a, you know, something to say. So, you know, that can be really, I think, really scary for people who know that it hurts a lot. So, I just think it's interesting to know that that is a part of it. Like that is a part of ADHD. And I think lots of people don't know that.
Yeah. And it makes it worse because we're always trying our best and it feels like we're trying 10 times harder than everyone else. And we're still failing at what we want to do and we're not doing it. And we get told that we're not good enough and we just need to try harder. And then that just feeds into it. So that along with the RSD is horrible. It feels like you're on a roller coaster of emotions and you know, the highs are so high, but the lows are so low. And it feels like it's like a Dementor comes at you, you know, from Harry Potter. It's like, the nothing's ever going to get better. And that's how I feel a lot of times. And that's why I think they thought I had bipolar, because the emotions, the mood swings are so intense. But it's all from ADHD, which is so eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. I can see how it could get labeled at or misdiagnosed at times with depression too, because there mm-hmm. are periods of times where I feel if I go into a bit of like an ADHD paralysis where I'm just like, I feel like I literally can't move or I can't do it. Like I just can't function.
Mm-hmm.
It is depressing to me. Like I do end up, I feel like becoming depressed because of that, but actually the root of it, I think, is the ADHD.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, you can have both. A lot of people are diagnosed with both. But in my opinion, I think a lot of people develop anxiety and depression because they have undiagnosed ADHD or because it's untreated. And, you know, if you had something going on within you that no one saw and just criticized you to almost death for 30 years of your life, wouldn't you be depressed and anxious?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's happening, right? And they just want to label it as that. But you need to treat the actual issue that's going on, as you said.
Totally. Well, what's interesting to me, like when I look back, okay, so I think from the outside, people have thought my whole life that I've been very organized. Like I think I've been a lot, a lot, just to kind of like make up for something that I felt was just wrong with me, or that I knew that there was a part of me that was challenged in that way, or like just always feeling not good enough. So I like almost went like overboard and like tried to like put mm-hmm. all, like I was just like the queen in high school of like overachievement and like
mm-hmm. you became a perfectionist.
Yeah, it just manifested that way. And yeah. I remember when I said about the ADHD diagnosis to someone in my family, and they were like, no, you can't be. You can't have that because you've always been so organized. You're such an achiever. Like that's, you mm-hmm. can't have it. And I was like, you don't understand how hard it has been for me to do that my whole life. And mm-hmm. It's not even about that. It's like the overwhelm and the like lack of feeling like I can ever like maintain it. Like that's just been something I feel such a just masking.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of women, I relate to this so much because a lot of women, like I'm the same way. A lot of women, because we're so afraid of being criticized, we go the complete opposite and we're like, we try to be perfect and we think that if we mask it and if no one sees that we're a mess inside and on the outside, we're perfect and our hair and our makeup and our homes are beautiful and perfect, then maybe they'll stop criticizing us.
Yeah.
Because it hurts so much. Yeah. I relate so much to that. And a lot of women go over to that end. And then what happens is that they're 30 years old and they're in complete burnout and they can't do it anymore. And they have a meltdown and then they get diagnosed with ADHD. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? Like, even, mm-hmm. like, oh my God, like, my graduation, you know, when they say, like, most whatever, and, like, you know, I don't know, nicest eyes, and, like, I don't know, that stuff. I was, like, voted most organized. Like, in my whole I was, like, what? Like, when I saw it, I actually was, like, laughing. I was, like, oh my God, they have no idea.
Oh, no.
Like, nobody knows. It was, like, I felt like this weird, like, secret that I was just like, like if anyone saw the chaos in my mind or even in my car, like in my vehicle, like I just
the rolling doom box of death. Yes.
Revelation. And then even like on 80 or on TikTok, when I saw something about the doom piles, I was like,
yes.
Oh my God, I didn't know other people did that. Like I have piles of things all the time because I have such a hard time knowing where things should go or like what to do with things, and I want it to be like tidy and clean, so then it just becomes like, well, just put it in this pile and that's, I guess that's where it's going to stay.
Oh yes, I relate to that so much. Like my house is not that organized because it's just like shoved in a box somewhere in a closet.
But it is that like, oh, out of sight, out of mind. Like that is
yes.
Nice. But no, it's so fascinating. Like I just, one thing I would say, it's so helpful to have people that are talking about it. And I know that, you know, you've created so much content and you've created a community, you know, so that's something to be so proud of. And I wondered about the shadow side of it, though, because I feel in doing that, you've done so much good. But is it true also that it can be a bit overwhelming when it comes to the, I guess, the criticism at times, or just like online, like haters? Like, how, what your experience been with that?
Oh, yeah. I want to quit social media like every day. Yeah, there is good and there's bad. The good is that I have, what, like 800,000 people in my community that love me and support me, and we all make each other feel like we're not alone. And that has been the greatest gift of my life. It also, like, you know, it has become my full-time job, and I'm so grateful. And people teach me a lot all the time, and it's so nice to know that I'm not alone. But at the same time, I often feel the most lonely I have ever felt, which is so strange that you feel lonely when you're surrounded by so many people. And I think at a certain point, in my opinion, you start to become like unrelatable when you become successful. And I don't really understand that. So like you lose a lot of friends, or like a lot of people don't understand the hatred on, or the haters on the level that I experience it, and which is not their fault. But even if I talk to my therapist, she doesn't understand what it's like when you get a video that has millions of views. How many people, like, you wake up in the morning and you're reading hundreds of hate comments, and like a person is not meant to wake up in the morning and read that much hatred. And that has been difficult for me, and it feels lonely. But what I've done is found other creators who are on, you know, kind of the same wavelength, and I can talk to them about it. But also, like, you know, they have their own haters, so they don't want to listen about my haters, you know. So it's nice to find people to relate to, but there's definitely a dark side to it. And it, I would just classify it as lonely. But like, it's also so amazing. It's hard to explain. I don't know.
Like, I get it, because in a way, like with what I do, there's a lot of people that I know, like, of course they benefit from it, and they're like, they've found healing from it, and there's such an amazing amount of like support in that way. But there are people in this world that literally make it their job or make it their priority to like disprove, try to discount, discredit, literally will just randomly message me that I'm going to hell because of what I do. And it's like, I don't necessarily, it's not that you care what some random person thinks about you that doesn't know you, but at some point it is really, you can feel the energy behind the comments that are made. And that is really disruptive and disturbing to a person, especially someone like you or me that does feel things very deeply, and we're able to feel the energy and the intention. So you could logically know that it's not true or whatever, and you can think your way out of it, like, okay, well, you know, you have to like almost like reparent yourself in that way. Yeah. But also, it still is not nice, and it's still very for your mental health, it can be really, really detrimental. So I have a lot of empathy for that part of it, because it's like you're doing something you feel passionate about, you're doing something that means something to you. And, you know, the aspect of it that I think that is, challenging is pretty challenging. Like, that is a big, it is a big thing to encounter. And I don't know that there's a ton of people that would understand to the extent that you're experiencing it. You know what I mean? It's a pretty unique unique situation, you know? So I could see how it could feel lonely at times, for sure.
Yeah, it can be hard. And then, like, I know you probably relate to this, but it feels like people benefit off of what you do, right? Like, I teach people about ADHD and help them feel not alone. You help people connect, and you help heal people. And So sometimes it can kind of feel like, does this person actually like me or do they just want something from me? And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if you experience that, but sometimes you can get that vibe. And then mm-hmm. even with the mean people, I still have so much. This is my detriment, but it's also the best thing about me, in my opinion. I have so much empathy. So when someone is mean to me, all I can think of is, I feel so bad for this person because they're so unhappy inside. Imagine how unhappy you have to be to send someone a message like that. And so even that is draining. Like, even though I know that like what they're saying is not true, I just feel so bad for them. And like even people that are mean to me, I feel bad for them. So like, what's wrong with me?
I do get it. Because I think what it comes down to is that you can still – I think you have an awareness of this, and I certainly feel this way. It's like, I understand that people on a soul level are not like mean and cruel. It's like literally like the human aspect of themselves that's like quite wounded or quite, you know, traumatized, or there's lots of reasons why mm-hmm. people, you know, hurt other people. But I think for me, I'm to the point now where I'm just like, I can feel that empathy, but I also feel like at some point, everybody has to be responsible, you know, for themselves.
Yeah.
For what they're putting out into the world. And I just,
oh, yes.
I just get, I don't know, sometimes it gets to me, like, depending on what's happening. If I'm like exhausted and I'm dealing with something like that, it can really get to me. But if I'm in like a good headspace and I'm feeling healthy and good, then I can tend to like let it go a little bit more easily. But I do know what you're talking about, though. Like, I notice one thing through my work and just like, I don't know, like growing my what I've been doing. I don't even like to say business because it's like pretty much my life, you know, like my life's work.
I feel you.
But when I, as I've grown it, I've noticed that there's some people that aren't actually happy that I'm doing good. Like, there are people that mm-hmm. I think were there for me when it was like hard, or there for me when I was maybe struggling more, and now that I'm like maybe not, it feels like, oh, they're not quite as invested, or it's not quite like the same kind of
mm-hmm.
So I do pay attention to like the people who are happy for my happiness and happy for when good things happen to you. I feel like it should be that your people that you're friends with are happy for you. Like, that seems to be like,
yes,
given, but it's not something that I've always seen.
Yes, I feel that so deeply. Like, you lose a lot of friends when you get better, and not a lot of people talk about that.
Yeah,
because a lot of people, and it's human nature to be jealous of people. Like, I'm jealous of people all the time, but my friends, I will always cheer them on. And it's strange when they don't do that for you. And whether it be like a big trigger, obviously, was my weight loss, but also my success on social media or in my business, as you say, like, I don't want to say business, but it is a business.
Yeah.
In my influencing, and, you know, it's strange when they just don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely jealousy, and it's sad to see who it comes from, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think too, because like for me, I'm always like, I know that if it was roles reversed, that I would be definitely like cheerleading for them. Like, I would be so mm-hmm. genuinely happy, you know? So I think that's the part that's a little yeah. bit that I found disheartening, you know, at times. I was
yeah.
just, oh, like, I didn't realize that it wasn't really reciprocal, you know, like in that way.
Yeah. And then you go into the, oh, I feel bad for them because they're obviously unhappy, you know?
Yeah. You kind of like, yeah, I think it's so complicated at that point, you know, like trying to navigate. But I know that you're a very creative person, and I know also of your talent with singing. I wonder, do you songwrite at all?
I used to a lot.
Yeah.
I used to a lot.
Yeah. I feel like I was just wanting to ask you if you think you'll ever get into it. Like, think you'll ever get back into singing and even songwriting?
Well, this is kind of like all tied into like when Emily died. So I used to be a professional singer. Like, that's what I used to do. And then I taught singing lessons, and that was all like, so it's hard to explain. When I sing, it's like otherworldly. Like, I feel it so deeply, and it brings out so much within me. And when Emily died, I felt like I couldn't sing anymore, and it kind of was taken away from me, because even just talking about it makes me want to cry, because it's so because Emily and I sang together.
Right. Okay.
So singing just reminds me of her, which is amazing because I love her so much. But she was taken in such a tragic way. It just brings that up. So lately, I've really been working with my therapist and, you know, with grieving. And as we know, grief comes in waves and it's not linear. But I've been trying to reintroduce music back into my life. And so I'll like start singing along on the radio, or we don't listen to radios anymore, whatever. And with my kids and stuff, I would really love to start singing again. Once in a while, I'll do like a little, you know, stitch on TikTok. But it also goes down to like RSD. I'm afraid that people aren't going to think that I'm good, which really sucks.
I get it. But I don't know. I just had a feeling that that was something like, and you can tell me if it's not like, you know. I feel like it's okay because, I don't know, I feel like I can say this, but that's maybe something that Emily's helping you to bring back. And it could be slow. You know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, like tomorrow, but just that's a part of you, you know, part of who you are. And my opinion with people who are singers, dancers, actors, like any kind of artist, I feel like so much of the time what comes through is coming, it's like a channeling of spirit. Like it comes through you in that way. And it's like an expression of you, who you are on a soul level. And so it's healing for you, but it's also healing for people who experience it. And so I feel like maybe part of the healing that Emily will kind of guide you through might have something to do with that.
Not me sobbing over here. Thank you. You know, it's crazy. It was just her birthday, just the other day in April. But I was thinking of her. I was just thinking of her so much in April. And I was also thinking about my singing teacher, who I love her so much. And we had the same singing teacher. And I kind of stopped talking to all of them because it was just so painful. And I was thinking of her so much, and I was thinking of Paula so much, who is my singing teacher. And I had this feeling of like, I really want to take my kids out for lunch. So my daughter actually suggested A&W, and I was like, that's a really like random choice to choose, but okay, let's go. And so I took my kids there, and in walks Paula, who I haven't seen for 7 years. And I was like, and it was the day before Emily's birthday. And I was like, this is the strangest thing that's ever happened. Like, I was just thinking of them. And then in walks her. And she had no plans. She wasn't meeting anyone there. And I was like, what? So she sat down with us and we had lunch for like over an hour. And it was wild. Like, it was so strange.
Or orchestrated. It feels so orchestrated. Emily. And, you know, I do know that they're able, like, it's like they are able to get the thought into, like, the inspiration or the thought into your daughter's mind, into your mind, into Paula's mind, like, all at the right time, so that you both end up in the right place at the right time to have that experience.
Oh, and I just saw the clock. It's 5:55. That's so cute. Yeah, it was just so weird. Like, because I was just thinking, like, I miss Paula so much because she was like my second mom, because I have a lot of issues with my mom and she was like my mom. And I was thinking about her, and then I was thinking what kind of cake we're going to get Emily, because we always sing her happy birthday. And so I was able to like text Paula a picture of the cake that we all had the next day. And it was just so crazy how the universe works that way, and like how we were like – we met together and she just strolled in. It was wild how the world works. Yeah.
Beautiful. That's amazing. I think that's such a cool experience that she gave you guys, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, it was really special.
Ah, amazing. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for being here and for sharing all of that with us, like with our listeners. And I wondered how people can find you.
Okay, so I'm on – well, first of all, thank you so much. You just made my entire week. I've had a terrible week, so thank you. I needed that message. I'm on TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. They're all @Claire Bowman Official, so they're all the same handle. And then I'm on YouTube, but it's my goal to bring up my YouTube. I manifested that. So I do have a YouTube channel. It's not doing well, but we're going to manifest that.
Yeah.
And I think that's everything right now. Have some things that I'm working on.
Awesome. Good. Well, definitely everyone listening, definitely check out Claire's content, because what I will say, I just have to express this to you, that you have a very, very natural and very clear way of communicating. And I think it's no coincidence. It's not like you created something in like some stroke or fluke of luck that you ended up getting a following. The reason that you have the following that you have is because of the sincerity that you have, and also that people do trust you because you are exactly who you say you are. And I really think that that translates. Like, people feel that really, really easily. Like, it's obvious. So I just think like creativity also. Like, I'm always just so amazed. Like, I have my TikTok, but it's very like, I don't know, it's just whatever. I'm trying, but I feel like the ideas that you have and the creativity that you have is so inspiring. So I just want to tell you that.
Thank you. That's like the best compliment I could ever get, honestly. And yeah, sometimes I'm like, people are going to hate to talk to me in real life because I stutter and I don't always say the right words. And then I listen back and I'm like, oh my God, I said the same thing like 4 times in a row. But because I'm able to edit my videos, so I always worry about that. But thank you so much. That's so nice.
It's all true. So
thank you.
And thank you everyone for listening. You can also, as always, find me at melissawhitemedium.com and on Instagram and Facebook. And yes, TikTok. I would like to grow that a little bit more. So find me there, and just leave you with lots of love. So thank you so much, Claire. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or feel free to leave a rating and a review. You can follow me on Instagram at Melissa White Medium, or on Facebook, Psychic Medium Melissa White. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.